Welcome to today's webinar, Trade-Based Solutions to Food Security. I'm Kristen Oplanik from USAID's Bureau for Economic Growth, Education, and Environment. This webinar is jointly sponsored by MicroLynx and AgriLynx. If you aren't familiar with both, I encourage you to check them out. For those who have been with us for years, I'm really excited to announce that in March, the MicroLynx platform will be rebranding and upgrading to a new site named MarketLynx to better reflect its broad economic growth and market development content. So stay tuned for that. Now back to today. Despite the potential for interregional trade of grains to improve food security in sub-Saharan Africa, most of us know that in practice, these commercial transactions get held up or even totally blocked by logistics challenges and non-tariff barriers. Today, we'll learn how USAID's trade and investment hubs, in partnership with the Eastern Africa Grain Council, are actually overcoming these issues. Our speakers have excellent stories to share as to how the hubs and the Eastern Africa Grain Council facilitated significant grain trade deals in Addis Ababa, Lusaka, and Kigali. I hope each of you will find their insights valuable and applicable to the work we're all doing, attempting to find enterprise-driven solutions and leverage markets for development impact. Now let me briefly introduce our speakers. Joining us from Nairobi, we have three speakers. Johannes Assefa serves as Director of Agriculture and Agribusiness for USAID's East Africa Trade and Investment Hub. He is an international development professional specializing in structured trade, agriculture market development, and international trade policy. Also in Nairobi, Scott Cameron is the Chief of the USAID Kenya and East Africa Office of Regional Economic Integration, which is the largest regional program and technical services unit in USAID Kenya and East Africa, leading implementation of two regional initiatives, Trade Africa and Feed the Future. And finally, in Nairobi, Gerald Masila has been the Executive Director and CEO of the Eastern Africa Grain Council since 2011. The aim of the Eastern Africa Grain Council is to support structured grain trade in the Eastern Africa region. Under his leadership, the organization has grown and its operation now spans 10 countries. And finally, joining us from Pretoria, Tshilo Rambuana is the Southern Africa Trade and Investment Hub Agribusiness Trade Director. He has worked to provide financial and institutional support to more than 17 commercial agricultural industry organizations representing over 70% of South African primary agricultural production and 14 agricultural trusts with over $20 million in assets. We also have in the room with us Jim Winkler and Elodie Manuel, who will help us manage the chat box and the Q&A. Please type your questions in as we go and don't hold back. We will address questions once the presentation has concluded. The recording will be available online after, and you will be able to download the PowerPoint. I know those are always questions. All right, with that, over to you, Johannes.
Thank you, Kristen. The frequency of droughts in Eastern and Southern Africa is increasing and affecting the food security of the entire region. Millions of people require increasingly emergency food assistance, and many more live in the shadows of starvation. Despite the dire challenges facing the region due to climate change and political stability, the region has the potential to feed itself and achieve food security within a generation. The region is also blessed with vast arable land, variances in agricultural zones, and staggered planting harvesting cycles means that the countries in the region could be at surplus or deficit positions at different times of the year for any given staple grain. If food is allowed to flow from surplus to deficit regions without unnecessary barriers, the region can and will wean itself from chronic emergency food assistance dependency and feed itself. The USAID-funded East, West, and Southern Africa Trade and Investment Hubs promote the movement of staple grains from surplus to deficit regions by addressing systemic challenges and market constraints to achieve food security in Africa. Today's webinar will discuss the efforts of the Eastern and Southern Africa Hubs to promote regional grain trade to improve food security by using market forces to avail staple food grains to deficit regions at reasonable prices. We have to remember today we're gathered to talk about regional free trade, but it's really important to remember why it's important to do regional free trade and talk about food security. Food security is a really sanitized word to say prevention of hunger and starvation. We have to understand the genesis of our work here in the region for this food trade and regional integration work. Last year, over 40 million people were affected by drought in Eastern and Southern Africa. We will show briefly a video that shows the extent of the damage caused by last year's El Nino condition in the region. So as you can see from the rest of the agenda, we just went through a background description of the food crisis situation in Eastern and Southern Africa. The rest of the agenda will include discussions from our colleagues from USAID, Kenya, and the Regional Economic Integration Office about the importance of regional trade facilitation. We'll hear from our colleague, Gerald Masilla, about partnership and sustainability and the importance of working with private sector partners. And then looking at the trade opportunities in Eastern and Southern Africa, why this trade is really huge and important to address food security in the region. Finally, challenges, nothing of this magnitude will pass through without challenges. We'll talk about the challenges and how we address the challenges we face and how we will continue to work to address these challenges. Next. I'll go through quickly on the food crisis issues. Again, 40 million people affected. In Kenya, alone, 23 counties last year were declared disaster. 2.7 million people required emergency food assistance. But this year, that number has grown to 3.2 million. Many, many more people, especially urban poor, have been affected by the rising food crisis. Fortunately, the drought spell rarely affects the entire Eastern Southern region, meaning that when some areas report a deficit, other areas will have a surplus. The challenge is that there is no free flow of food between the surplus and deficit regions, and therefore countries like Ethiopia, which had last year 6.3 million metric tons, the second highest harvest of maize, have difficulties of selling. In fact, at one point, the government was forced to subsidize some of that, while we had countries like Kenya next door with a huge, almost close to 2 million metric tons of deficit for maize. Then there are other challenges, infrastructure, military affairs, and logistics that prevent the movement of grains in the region. As you can see from the map in general, the El Nino effect was severely affected Eastern, Central, and Southern Africa. But in between, you see some white spaces areas where there were opportunities where surplus production was produced. Next. Now moving on to my colleague from USAID East Africa and REI, Scott Cameron. He'll talk about briefly about the importance of supporting regional grain trade and to achieve food security from the U.S. government perspective and USAID's global food security strategy perspective. Scott, over to you.
Sure. Thank you, Johannes. So to take a step back, overall, the three African trade and investment hubs are the U.S. government's main platform for transforming African economies and deepening the U.S.-Africa trade relationship. We see USAID's support of trade facilitation and economic integration in Africa as important tools for increasing economic development, investment, and inclusive agriculture sector growth to make our African partner countries more stable and prosperous, while also ensuring that both American and African businesses thrive. So focusing on our work facilitating cross-border grain trade, our initiatives specifically improve the efficiency and transparency of cross-border transactions, harmonize safety and quality standards, and reduce the time and cost of doing business in the region. The impact of these efforts is a stable and self-sufficient region with the capacity to meet emerging food crises, such as the one Johannes outlined. These trade initiatives, as he also said, also advance the U.S. government's Feed the Future goals, specifically increasing the access, availability, and utilization of staple foods across the region. Acting U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Donald Yamamoto, articulated this point well when he stated, If we break down non-tariff trade barriers and barriers that prevent trade from happening between the countries, then what we are going to see is not only expansion of investment in trade and opportunities, but also economic growth. And that could be the spark, the basis for other trade and development. Moving on to the next slide. As previously mentioned, the East, West, and Southern African trade and investment hubs are USAID's primary vehicle for trade facilitation within the continent and between Africa and the United States. Over the last several years, different iterations of the trade and investment hubs have supported economic growth in Africa by developing regional staple food markets, supporting the implementation of best practice agricultural and food trade policies and standards, building export-ready value chains, facilitating access to finance and promoting investment, modernizing customs systems and processes, creating market linkages between the U.S. and Africa under the African Growth and Opportunities Act, and supporting the implementation of common markets and trade blocks. Some of our key results include, since 2010, supporting over $320 million in new private sector investments and facilitating almost $1 billion in exports from Africa to the United States under AGOA. Along the way, since 2014, the hubs have also helped create over 60,000 jobs. Overall, these efforts have played a critical role in creating an enabling environment for trade and investment, leading to economic prosperity. The prosperity also contributes to Africa's sustainable growth and the national security interests of the United States. Moving to the next slide, the U.S., now talking specifically about East Africa, the U.S. East Africa Trade and Investment Hub recently rolled out several initiatives that have increased regional trade and improved food security by supporting sustainable movement of surplus staple foods to deficit areas. This approach is very consistent with our new administration's priority of enterprise-driven development as a means for achieving sustainable economic growth for the countries in which we work while we help them on their development journey towards self-reliance. Specifically, the East Africa Trade and Investment Hub has supported grain trade throughout Eastern and Southern Africa by creating critical market linkages through business-to-business forums, supporting policy reforms and regulations to support regional trade and reduce the cost of doing business, the harmonization of grain standards across the East African community, supporting the development of market information systems, and finally facilitating access to working finance for grain transactions. So with that, I can turn it over to the next speaker. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. This is Beck Johannes. Nothing of this magnitude could be done just by development partners. It's important to recognize the importance of working with local and regional partners to develop and work with strategies that will address food security, especially specifically in this case, using trade as a means to achieve food trade. In this initiative, the Eastern and Southern Africa Trade Hubs worked closely with the Eastern Africa Grain Council as a partner. And these partnerships, including partnership with the region's government and the regional RECs, including here in the ESC, were important. I'll turn over the mic to Gerald Matilla, the Executive Director of EAGC, to talk about the partnership and EAGC itself and what it stands for, and the market opportunities that exist in Eastern and Southern Africa for grain trade and for future, for the possibility to reach food security in the region.
Thank you very much, Johannes. My name is Gerald Masila, as has been said. I am the Executive Director of the Eastern Africa Grain Council. I will tackle three topics. One, I will quickly say who EAGC is for the benefit of those who may not have interacted or known EAGC. Then I'll quickly talk about the partnership and the opportunity to do with trade. So by way of introduction, the Eastern Africa Grain Council is a membership organization, not-for-profit, that is for the grain value chain stakeholders working or present in the Eastern Africa region, working in 10 countries. These are basically the five or six ESC countries and the next tier of countries. And the membership of EAGC is open to organizations, to companies, to farmer groups, to traders, to processors, and even the service providers who are associate members in the sector. And we currently have a membership of over 350 member organizations in the 10 countries in the Eastern Africa region. And our reason for existence as an organization is to promote and to foster trade, essentially structured trade, cross-border trade, addressing barriers to trade and improving transaction costs and all that, so that the end result is increased volume and value of trade. How do we do this? We have a number of interventions and services that we offer at TABC. One is that we provide market information through our market information service, the Regional Agricultural Trade Intelligence Network, RATIN. Secondly, we do training and capacity building for our members and stakeholders through our institute, the Eastern Africa Grain Institute. We also are involved in the policy arena, looking at developing the policy agendas, creating and looking for evidence, and also dialogue with the policymakers to be able to create an enabling environment for the grain sector to thrive. And this we do through a platform that brings together a number of other organizations involved. Finally, we push everything to trade. We push everything through trade so that we have structured trading systems and discipline our flagship on that. So in this regard, we partnered with the USA Trade Hub, and in this hub and in partnership with them, ENGC made the role of being able to bring the buyers and the sellers together. And through this, we were able to have this successful event. So what do I see as the opportunity in this region, particularly opportunity for trade in the Eastern Africa region? First of all, you recognize that Africa is a very large continent. It's quite big. Africa, you can say, is equivalent to several other continents like China, India, the US, and most of Europe put together. And from a population perspective, just taking the Eastern and Southern Africa region, you're talking about 664 million people. This is double the population in the U.S. And you can see from the people perspective, there is from the land side and also from the people population, there is a big opportunity in Africa in that we have the land side, we have the arable land, we've got a tropical climate, we've got irrigation potential, and you have a crop calendar that provides for this. So on the consumption front, we have a rural and urban population. We've got grain as a staple of food in this region, and we have grain being produced in the entire region, especially for food and for feed. And therefore, looking at the fact that we harvest and plant and produce at different times, this is a great opportunity for trade to happen. When one region harvests, or one country harvests, they can sell to the other, and the cycle can continue happening. And indeed, we look even from our statistics that the region is food sufficient, only that food does not move across the border. Over to you, Johannes, on that.
Thank you, Gerald. It's very important to reemphasize what Gerald just said. If you look at the slide 14, the production surplus deficit regions, and then to the crop calendar on slide 15, what you can see is that, especially in the 10 countries that UNGC has offices in and members, you can find a harvest of one kind every month of the year. So at any given time, one country could be a surplus producer and another country could be a deficit producer. So the conditions are right for the flow of surplus production to deficit regions. And it's really important to emphasize that point. Now, I'll be moving over to the next set of discussion and slides. Why do regional grain trade and the regional grain trade facilitation initiative in general? It's really important to understand the conditions and the reasons. First of all, as we talked about earlier, the great drought that affected the whole region last year because of the El Nino conditions, it's not new, but it's getting greater and more prevalent, and it's affecting millions of people. So it created a huge crisis. So there was a need to look within the region for solutions to feed the region from regional resources, from regional grown grains themselves. Second, we looked at opportunities that have the least amount of market distortion. In this instance, all that USAID supported was enabling the region partners, especially here, EADC and its members, to do what they do best, trade, with some support, financial and technical support. So this is essentially a private-driven effort with little market distortion and with a small amount of investment. The total investment last year is about $100,000, which has resulted in the transaction of 1.2 million metric tons over a value of about $400 million. It also provides an opportunity for sustainability. Again, we work as catalysts to really find a solution for problems and bottlenecks that affect grain trade in the region. In this case, this movement of surplus to deficit in the region. By partnering and working with the ADC, briefly I was muted there somehow automatically. I'm back again. So the sustainability angle is very important. This is part of the U.S. government, the United States new focus of the global food security strategy, which one of the pillars is the sustainability of everything we do. In fact, in this case, not just the EADC, but because of the process we've done, other traders who are not members of the EADC or other regional organizations have jumped on the bandwagon and will continue this work long after we've left the team. And then finally, looking at the region's governments and their efforts to provide food and nutrition to their people, and the process of helping to balance the region's food balance sheet, helping governments that have surplus, in this case, for example, Ethiopia had 5.3 million metric tons of maize produced but no market, and Kenya with nearly 2 million metric tons of maize deficit. And connecting those two and helping is another great part of the initiative. Last but not least, despite our efforts and our work, there were challenges. But these challenges could only be met by a partnership of the private sector, the donor community, and the region's government. This provided an excellent opportunity to foster long-lasting partnership to resolve the region's, or at least to address the region's food security situation. So that's really what really started the whole process. We spent a great deal of time researching, understanding the opportunities and challenges. Now, many of us, including myself, I worked in 12 African countries working against structured trade and food trade. This is not news to us. We knew there was food in the region, but making it available and allowing it to flow was not an easy task. So we had to do a lot of work. We had to educate our partners, not just regional governments, not just the regional organizations or traders, but also regional governments and even the donor communities to make sure everyone appreciated the opportunity, but also the magnitude of the challenge. All right, moving on. Next slide. We'll talk now briefly about the B2Bs and the process to moving grain from surplus to deficit region. Last year, the Eastern Africa Trade and Investment Hub, partnering with the EADC first, did a B2B in Ethiopia on March 7th, which resulted in about 300,000 metric tons of grain traded. And additional trades were concluded in Kenya between Kenyan and Ethiopian traders specifically. Similar B2Bs were held in Zambia on June 28th in partnership with the Southern Africa Trade Investment Hub, and eventually just recently in November in Rwanda, again, which resulted in general, in total, in 1.2 million metric tons of cross-border trade in staple grains, resulting in a value of about $402 million. The amount of grain traded, in our estimation, will provide food security for about 14.4 million people in the region. This is very important. Also, if you look at just Kenya alone,
the actual transactions involving Kenya, which are about 600,000 metric tons of grain, will cover essentially a little over 60% or a little over 50% of Kenya's deficit last year. And the numbers also are very important when it comes to farmers. Again, if you take the 1.2 million metric tons, the number of farmers that could have benefited or that benefited from this process, are there estimated about 800,000 farmers from this 1.2 million metric tons of transaction. So these numbers are really important, but the numbers, we'll talk about what happened really behind the numbers and what really drove this process and the challenges that faced us. Now, the 1.2 million metric tons in transactions are contracts completed or assigned at the B2B. The next process is to facilitate and support the completion of the transactions. Obviously, we had many challenges in supporting the traders and the businesses that participated in this process. We'll talk briefly about some of these challenges. The slides you're seeing are pictures, I don't know how clear they are basically a sampling of the various B2Bs we've held across the region last year, where the businesses are paired with buyers and sellers. We essentially use a speed dating model to organize and match buyers and sellers throughout the B2B processes. Now, I would like to invite my colleague, Tashilo, to talk briefly about the Zambian B2B session and their effort to support Southern Africa sellers to send to Eastern Africa, the Eastern Africa region, and from the Southern Africa perspective. Tashilo? All right, we'll move onward forward. Moving on, let's talk about the challenges. Really, I think most of you know this process and the explanations are pretty straightforward, but the challenges involved and the solutions we tried to find for those challenges were really the true story, I mean, the real story of this whole B2B process and the trade facilitation effort. I'd like to invite my colleague, Gerald, to really start talking about the challenges we faced in Zambia, and then I'll talk about Ethiopia. And we'll invite also Tashilo, if he comes back, to talk about, from the Southern Africa perspective, the various challenges and the solutions that we found for some of the challenges.
Thank you, Johannes. Yes, we did have the B2B in Zambia, and when we got into that environment, quite a number of challenges came up. One of the challenges was to do with logistics. In logistics, Zambia being quite landlocked, very inside positioned in Africa, you have two options. You either do a road transport up through Tanzania to bring to the other countries up in Eastern Africa, or you could go through again by road to the port of Beira in Mozambique and then ship across to Mombasa or to Dar. And here the challenge was that the costs were quite high to be able to move the commodities across there. And we even had a situation where the rail cost, the rail quotation per ton, was much more than road transport quotation per ton. And that was quite amazing and a big challenge. And so that sort of limited the competitiveness of Zambia in being able to penetrate the other countries in the Eastern Africa region. Secondly, when you do a B2B and you have some substantial quantities being signed up, you know, good quantities like 20, 30, 40, 50, 1,000 metric tons, the money involved is quite substantial. And to do this, you would need, you know, proper trade instruments like LC, and this is major cross-border trade. So for the buyers and the sellers to be able to access finance was quite a challenge, to be able to get those LCs and also the insurance related to it. Next issue is that, which was, in fact, the initial issue was that when we landed in Zambia, there was an export ban in place, which had just been opened up when we got to engage with the Zambian government. But there was a 10% tax on exports. And to our great joy, that was one of the immediate things that happened with our engagement with government. They lifted that 10% tax, and that really made things possible. The other challenge was to do with the standards. So the standards in Zambia being part of SADC, and the buyers from the Eastern Africa, from the EAC community. EAC has its own harmonized standards for grades and staples, but the Southern Africa does not, and the specs and the specifications, including some of the conformity requirements, were different. So we then had to engage with the various bureaus, with government involvement, and have that resolved. And finally, we had also issues of transshipment, being able to transship out of Zambia through the countries out there to bring to the countries in the other parts of Eastern Africa was quite a challenge. And so we had to address them, and there still are challenges that we had to deal with, but eventually trucks moved and the trade happened.
All right, let me just go over also to what happened with Ethiopia. People ask us questions, why didn't anybody else think this before? Or why didn't this happen before? It's simple. Historically, these regions are not connected economically to the EAC region. There's always been some transactions, but not really out of Bolsonaro for various reasons. For Zambia, for example, distance was an issue. But for Ethiopia, it's right next door to the EAC. But it might as well have been, Ethiopia could be Argentina. There is very little trade linkage and connectivity. So the first challenge was actually creating a trade linkage. When we created the first test pilot linkage meeting here in Nairobi, where we brought seven of the top grain exporters from Ethiopia to meet with Kenyan traders, it was like a family reunion of long-lost relatives, right next to each other, but they didn't know each other. It did take a long time for them to connect because they have shared values, shared history, shared culture, and many more that binds these countries than separates them. But very little trade took place before. In fact, for Ethiopian traders, it was easier to export maize to China and Italy for chicken feed than to export to Kenya and the EAC. They just didn't know the market existed. They didn't know Kenyans consumed 94 to 100 kg per capita per year. The knowledge didn't exist. Ethiopia, as being a separate and outside of the EAC, also was not linked to the EAC market in terms of trade agreements. So it stayed out of the region's market for that reason as well. But then there are also other reasons. There are more practical challenges, such as standards, as Gerald mentioned with Zambia. Ethiopia's grain standards are different from the EAC's harmonized grain standards. Other issues, including logistics. Ethiopia's drive on the right side, Kenya's drive on the left side. The axle load limitation in Ethiopia is much higher than Kenya's. Ethiopia is 40 tons per truck, and Kenya's is 26, and so on and so on. And financial sector connectivity is very low, so payment systems were another challenge. The region, the two countries, at least the Ethiopian banks, were not accustomed to dealing with Kenyan and East African banks, so it's very difficult to do payments and to create a smooth transactional process. But also, Ethiopia has a very unique foreign currency control system that constrains the ability of traders to trade with others. And this challenge added a burden, again, and a transactional cost to the relationship. Finally, an opportunity that was a barrier in the past was infrastructure, right? Previously, until 2 years ago, there was no tarmac road linking Nairobi to the border town of Moyale, which is a common town between Ethiopia and Kenya. But just 2 years ago, a beautiful tarmac all-weather road was completed. That, again, made it easier to trade, but it was a major challenge in the past. Finally, because Ethiopia is not a member of the EAC or has not integrated with the COMESA customs territory, Ethiopian grain is taxed, there's a duty of 50% on it. This is another major challenge. This is a challenge, again, EAGC worked with the government of Kenya to address in terms of the lifting of the common external tariff or the making of the application of stay of application to remove temporarily the tariffs to allow grain to flow to Kenya. There's also one more challenge was the COC requirements, the conformity of quality certification, rules of origin, SPA certification. All of these requirements are different. For example, the Kenyan government has appointed SGS as their agent in Ethiopia, but SGS doesn't have an office in Addis or in anywhere in Ethiopia. Samples have to be sent to Kenya, and it takes on average about 2 weeks to get samples processed. We had to intervene with our partners with the AGC to work with the government of Kenya at the highest level to create a simplified process of conformity for quality. We did the same, by the way, in Zambia, working with the Minister of Finance as well as the Minister of Agriculture to simplify the process of compliance on quality. This does not mean where the quality standards were lowered. It's just the documentary and the bureaucratic requirements were reduced. The steps taken for an exporter to fulfill the requirement were narrowed and expedited. So the border agencies, for example, on the Kenyan side, worked closely with the Minister of Agriculture, His Excellency Willie Betts, to make sure there was a simplified and unified, coherent process. In many countries, these agencies don't talk to each other, let alone work together. But this crisis gave us an opportunity to bring together with the minister the various border agencies to make sure there was a simplified process for compliance and rules of origin conformity. And anyway, at the end of the day, the biggest achievement, I think, through this process and in terms of achieving or meeting the challenges was really the training and connecting these traders. For example, with the Ethiopia B2B, what we found out is the moment after we concluded the first B2B, Kenyan and East African traders in general were making trips on their own and visiting Addis to make additional deals and transactions. Now, unfortunately, as big as the transactions were concluded at the B2B, many of them were not fulfilled because of the various challenges I mentioned and went through. One of them, the biggest of all, is export bans. In Ethiopia, the export ban still persists. There's an exception to the ban, and the exception is basically a permitting process that allows commercial farmers and unions and government paracetals to export. Working through that process with our partners in Ethiopia, the Addis Ababa Chamber of Commerce, we were able to get not many, but few really high-quality exporters to be able to export. And that allowed for the opening of the first time ever large-scale commercial grain trade between Ethiopia and Kenya. This is historic, folks. This has never been done besides a small amount of smuggling of few trucks here and there. There's never been a transparent, large-scale grain trade between Ethiopia and the EAC region ever before. This is monumental. What this allows us is for Ethiopian farmers to be able to sell to Kenyans. And for Ethiopian farmers, this is a food security response as well. Maize is not consumed in Ethiopia as a staple. It's a cash crop, mostly produced for alcohol, local brewing of alcohol, animal feed, and a small amount mixed with other grains for baking and feeding. So the farmer's ability in Ethiopia to sell would mean the ability for them to build assets and to live a healthy and better life. Gerald, I'll invite you to say a few more. I don't know if you skip, or if you want to add to the challenges and the solutions we were able to find.
I think, Johannes, you've addressed them quite well, the real life challenges that we face, and how we were able to resolve them. Quite interestingly, especially working with government, working with the other partners, particularly the government, without them giving us the duty waivers for the common external tariff, it would have been difficult to get the Ethiopian maize coming into Kenya, because it would have been subject to a 50% import tax, and that would have meant not possible to get in. Like Johannes also said, on the facilitation, government was able to line up all the trade facilitation agencies, the plant health people, the Kenya Plant Health Inspection, who were able to give the import permits for the grain. We had also the bureaus of standards, you know, are present and are operating at the border to get all the transactions done, the revenue authorities, and also even the participation of the government strategic food reserve. So that really worked well and helped quite significantly.
Gerald, can you briefly talk about also the work the AGC did in Zambia in bringing the Minister of Finance and Agriculture to Kenya to facilitate the reduction of the documentary requirements for COC?
Thank you, Ahmed. So when we were in Zambia and we established those challenges that I enumerated earlier on that really needed attention, we were quite lucky to also get in Zambia the audience of a key minister. We had the Minister of Finance, Honorable Felix Mutasi, attending and opening our B2B in Zambia. And we also had the Minister for Agriculture, Dora, also being represented. And so we were together with the stakeholders, were able to give a memorandum to the government of Zambia, giving suggestions on how those challenges could be dealt with. So there and then, the finance minister announced the lifting of the 10% tax, like I said, and we suggested, as EAGC, we suggested to them to reach out to their counterparts in Kenya, basically the Minister of Finance in Kenya, Minister of Trade in Kenya, Minister of Agriculture in Kenya, and we as EAGC got in touch with them, connected the two. Of course, they know each other, they are colleagues, they work well, but we were able to get appointments in Nairobi within 24 hours. And the week that followed, we had a high delegation team from Zambia led by the finance minister that came and met the counterparts in Kenya, and they were able to go through all the issues and agree on the facilitation and how both governments will cooperate to support private sector to do the transactions, so that the transactions are done and the buying and selling is done by private sector, but the government provides all the other necessary facilitation. So we did we had meetings in Nairobi that were quite again historical. For the very first time, we have such a kind of engagement at that level, and we have liked to get resolutions and agreements, and they were all followed up and effected.
Just I want to add a little more on the Ethiopia side of the process. Now, you know, people will ask, last year, for example, 8 million people needed emergency food assistance in Ethiopia. Why is Ethiopia exporting maize? It's a very simple question, unless you know Ethiopia or the region. There's never been, and I dare say, or maybe very minimal, food aid that included maize. Maize is not consumed as staples in Ethiopia. But Ethiopia and Dalila's partners over the last 10 years have done a great deal of work to improve the production and productivity of maize. Ethiopia has now become the most productive and the largest producer of maize in Eastern Africa. But with that productivity, it's produced as a commercial crop, not as a staple. For Ethiopian farmers, it's an important additional income, it's an additional asset to buy grains of their choice, teff and wheat and other staples not grown in the maize growing region. There are essentially 9 million farmers that produce the 5.3 million metric tons of meat. In fact, it constitutes less than 10% of the calorie intake of the average Ethiopian, meaning maize consumption. So maize is really, it could be as considered like coffee or tea or else something else. So that these farmers live on the edge of disaster. They live on the edge of receiving emergency food assistance. So when they have good harvest of maize, if they are not able to sell at reasonable price, they in turn will be added to that 8 million people who need emergency food assistance. So last year, if Ethiopian farmers were not able to export that maize to Kenya and East Africa, the 8 million number could have easily been 15 million or 14 million people who would have needed emergency food assistance. So in our view, assisting Ethiopian farmers export is a food security response to Ethiopia's food emergency needs as well, right? In fact, I'll give you a very good, important event that took place. About 10 years ago, Ethiopia had a bumper harvest in Maine, and prices collapsed so low that the bag cost more than the maize itself. That region that usually produced a huge amount of maize stopped producing maize, and now they produce eucalyptus trees for export to Sudan. Essentially, they stopped producing food. It had a devastating impact on the regions, on the country's food balance sheet. So it's really important to provide farmers who produce cash crops here, in this case, to provide markets to facilitate and support them to receive fair market value for their produce. Again, on the Kenya side, instead of importing maize from Mexico at exuberant prices, which would have taken 3 months to reach, here you have a neighboring country that produced a bumper harvest, a good quality, high quality maize that's really grown for flour, right? Available at a reasonable price. The price of maize from Ethiopia was much cheaper than maize from Mexico and elsewhere. It was very competitive. So eventually what happened, actually, when it started, because of the bumper harvest, prices had been collapsing in Ethiopia. The government was forced to actually subsidize maize in Ethiopia. They had started providing the meager resources they have to subsidize the buying of maize by the National Parastatal Grain Trading Agency. But the B2B, even the news of the B2B, the arrival of East African buyers increased the price of maize locally to a fair market value. It increased by 30% in a very short amount of time. And what happened last year in Ethiopia was because of the bumper harvest, traders did not buy ahead and hold maize. Normally, traders come in at harvest, buy a cheap price, hold it, and then sell it later. But last year, because of the uncertainty of the market conditions, traders didn't buy it. And fortunately for the farmers, they were holding large stocks of maize. This allowed farmers to actually get a good portion of the total export parity price value of what was exported, which now resulted going forward to this year. This year, Ethiopia is again having another great year in maize production, largely because of the incentives, the market incentives provided to the farmers. In fact, last year, Ethiopian maize harvest was affected by armyworms, and the rain cycles were reduced from last year, but they were still able to produce more because farmers increased the acreage they planted because they got good returns last year. So again, allowing and helping Ethiopian farmers to trade with their neighbors and sell to deficit regions is a food security response to Ethiopian farmers and a food security response for Eastern Africa. Now, without further ado, we'll go to the next part of it. We'll just summarize the key takeaways from our discussion today. We've simplified and generalized the takeaways, but I think you've gotten a feel for the details of the various issues we dealt with throughout last year with this regional grain trade facilitation process. We've identified about four key takeaways. The first is, I think this is the realization that East and Southern Africa the Eastern and Southern Africa region has the capacity to treat itself and sees reliance of food aid. It is not unreasonable or hopeful just to think that the region could be food secure within a short amount of time. We believe it can be if trade barriers are removed, if the region is integrated further.